We don't need a gavel. I can yell loud enough. Let's call this meeting to order. We have the minutes of March 15th. Anybody read the minutes from March 15th?
I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney, would you like to move those minutes?
Yes, sir.
Representative Mahoney moves the minutes of March 15th. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
We do have aye.
Motion carries. And Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 2874 and recommend approval and move it to the General Register. And I have an A1 amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
A1 amendment. Okay. Would you just like to explain your A1 amendment?
Yes. The original bill talks about the inclusion of one city in western Carver County, and the A1 amendment includes two additional cities, the cities of Hamburg and New Germany, and two Norwood Young America. And it correlates with what we did in the Senate.
Very well. Any questions from the members on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, Representative Leidiger will renew his motion to have the A1 amendment approved. All in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. It's your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. This is a very simple bill. It is a bill which takes the three cities out. I'll refer for you, first of all, to the map that I handed out. You'll see the McLeod and Carver County lines, and right to the right of the McLeod County line, you'll see the cities of Hamburg, Norwood, Young America, and then north of that, you'll see New Germany. The cities to the west of the McLeod County line, like Plato City, they are eligible for grants under the General Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program. And because Carver County is part of the Metropolitan, the Met Council program vis-a-vis their infrastructure, it is common for us to go ahead and exempt certain cities and allow them to be eligible for grants under the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program. And so all this bill does is do that. And I have testifiers from Norwood Young America, which is really, they have a project which is prompting this action so that we can go ahead and do some work with their wastewater treatment program, and I'll turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Leidiger. Good afternoon, Representative Gunther and members of the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Committee. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 2874.
Would you give your name for the record?
My name is Christy Rock, and I'm the Economic Development Coordinator for the City of Norwood Young America.
Good to have you here.
Thank you. The City of Norwood Young America is a standalone community located on the western edge of Carver County and the Twin Cities metropolitan area, essentially serving as the gateway to southwest Minnesota. The population of Norwood Young America is slightly more than 3,500. It is not a part of the Met Council's Metropolitan Utilities Service Area. Despite the fact that the community is more rural in nature, being located just 3 miles from the McLeod County border, it is ineligible to apply for many of the state's Greater Minnesota Economic Development Grant programs. The City of Norwood Young America is hoping to become eligible for the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program for a number of reasons on which we will testify here today. Over the past 5 to 10 years, the City of Norwood Young America has experienced the closing of several large employers, including Oak Grove Dairy, Schwann's, and Norwood Foods, which resulted in the loss of 300-plus good-paying jobs, which are substantial for a community the size of 3,500. Moreover, one of the community's larger employers, Young America Corporation, has reduced employment significantly over the past 8 years. Employment at Young America Corporation has gone from a high of 654 in 2006 to slightly more than 200 in 2011. Due to the loss of the aforementioned businesses and jobs, the city has made it a priority to attract new employers to the community. The city is currently working with a serious prospect for the former Norwood Foods Schwann's manufacturing facility, a 50,000 square foot building located in the city's older industrial park. This facility is currently in foreclosure and has been vacant for over a year. The facility has not been used to its full potential since Schwann's ceased its operations in the community in 2004. The prospect we are working with is also a food manufacturer that hopes to relocate its operations from another state. The prospect has ties to another successful Minnesota company. The prospect would potentially create 55 good-paying jobs on day one and up to 85 jobs after 2 years. The average wages are above $12 an hour, with management positions paying more than $20 an hour. If the prospect successfully acquires the facility, they intend to make approximately $8 million in improvements to the building, including the installation of machinery and equipment. Unfortunately, the project is not without its challenges, which are due in part to the fact that the city operates its own water treatment plant and wastewater treatment facility. One of the challenges the city is facing with regards to this prospect is the fact it is a heavy water wastewater user. In order to accommodate the wastewater flow from this prospect's manufacturing operations, the city needs to make some significant improvements to its wastewater treatment plant. The city's initial capital cost to accommodate the prospect flows on day one of operations is $3 million. The city may need to incur another $2.5 million in capital costs after 5 years if the prospect's growth projections hold true. City leaders understand the importance of maintaining and improving the community's infrastructure as a means to retain existing businesses as well as to attract new economic development activity. Over the past 5 years, the city has made significant improvements to its water plant and wastewater treatment facility. All of these improvements cost the city well over $12 million. The Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Grant Program could help the city finance the cost associated with bringing an excellent business prospect to the community. This is potentially a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the community of Norwood Young America to secure a business for a highly specialized vacant manufacturing facility. And it's for this reason that I ask you to support House File 2874.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Scott Marquardt. I'm the Economic Development Program Director at the Southwest Initiative Foundation based in Hutchinson. The Southwest Initiative Foundation recognizes the economic opportunity that this project presents to the city of Norwood Young America, our region, and the state of Minnesota. In spite of the fact that the city of Norwood Young America is located 3 miles outside of our 18-county traditional service territory, our organization was willing to blur our boundaries, and we've committed $600,000 in gap financing for this project because of its regional impact. As I said, this prospect has significant regional impact, and it aligns strongly with the strategic asset sectors that over 1,000 business and community leaders identified as having the greatest potential for our region to compete in a global marketplace. So we think this has significant impact on Southwest Minnesota, all of Southern Minnesota, and Greater Minnesota in general. Regardless of whether the City of Norwood Young America is able to successfully secure the prospect for this vacant facility, we believe the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program would help the city attract other businesses in the future. For example, the city's been working with the developers of the Carver County Multimodal Industrial Park proposed just east of the city limits. These developers envision that the city will eventually annex more than 1,500 acres and provide services to the various warehouses and distribution facilities located in this industrial park. While the city will assess some of the costs to property owners in the park, it will still incur expenses associated with potential needs for oversizing and long-term maintenance. This project stands to have a tremendous economic impact on the city, the Southwest Metro, southern Minnesota, and the state as a whole. And we realize that the city leaders see a tremendous need to diversify the community's economy. Most of the businesses located in Norwood Young America have fewer than 20 employees, and the vast majority employ between 1 and 4 people. The community's largest employer is Young America Corporation, who has significantly reduced its workforce over the past 8 years. The majority of people living in Norwood Young America who are eligible to work have to commute to another city to find employment. And I also ask for your support of this bill for its impact on our region and greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair. Paymar.
Michael, okay. Represent Paymar.
Mr. Chair, just for the author here, just so I'm just trying to understand, or maybe you can respond to the potential precedent that we might be setting here with this, if you see it as one. Actually, I was in Norwood Young America a couple of weeks ago. It's a nice town. My first time there. But if we do this for your communities, why wouldn't we do it for other communities, you know, with close to the MUSA line, ask for exceptions? And, you know, when does it stop? Not that your proposal isn't a good proposal. Or could I amend St. Paul on this, for instance? We've suffered some plant closures. I'll defer to my St. Paul colleague over here. But
well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No Leidinger.
Thank you for the question. My understanding is we're not setting precedents. This has been done before. And we can call deed up to talk to some details on that. But this is an area that, St. Paul, for instance, clearly is serviced by the Met Council. This is an area where the Met Council doesn't reach out quite this far, is my understanding. But why don't we call up Deed to talk about the precedence of this?
I don't know if anyone else wants to hear. It just seems like you're amending the definition of the city located outside the metropolitan area to make these cities eligible for this grant program. I mean, it just seems, you know, where does the boundary, when does the boundary expand, and why would other communities be asking for this exception? That's my only question.
Okay.
But if someone from Deed wants to speak to it, that's fine. I don't know if it's anyone else has.
Somebody from Deed want to speak to that issue?
They're jumping at the chance.
His eyes opened up quite a bit when that was suggested. Who's next? Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually am interested in getting the answer for Representative Paymar's question. I'm not sure that this has been done before, but I think that setting a precedence is an important question to ask. So maybe if Representative Leidinger could further clarify.
You want to try it?
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Dicklich. I'm a legislative director with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I am not an expert in this field, but I will, with this program, but I will do my best to answer the question. The BDPI money is bonding dollars and usually comes through the bonding bill. The only time that we know of, and we're looking into it, is that BDPI gets to outside, possibly outside the district, is if it's earmarked in the bonding bill.
Is that what, Mr. Chair, is that what we're doing then?
No.
May I speak to that just briefly? My understanding, Mr. Chair?
Look forward to your conversation.
This allows the city of Norwood to compete for a grant. And that's essentially that's what it does.
Okay. Representative Moline.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Leidinger, could we get clarification if it's ever been changed in the statute before, specifically adding other cities to the definition of what qualifies as a city under the grant?
I'm just tickled to death that the people from the metro want to be part of Greater Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Seems to be some benefits.
At least they want our benefits. Good point.
He hasn't answered her question yet.
Yes.
Nobody's answered her question. Anybody know the answer to her question?
I don't. I'm sorry. Representative Mellon?
Maline.
I'm sorry. I don't believe that this has been done before.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that that just goes to Representative Paymar's initial comments that this is setting a precedence, and, you know, I know that there's lots of people sitting on this committee on both sides of the aisle that we actually do represent Greater Minnesota. My district is 200 miles from the Twin Cities, and so I think that carving out specific exceptions for cities that don't all already qualify for these grants is a slippery slope to go down. And pretty soon, this grant won't be dedicated for Greater Minnesota as it is right now.
It's my understanding, however, that the Met Council doesn't really recognize Young America as part of the Met Council's area, and they have not attempted to do anything about this issue. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
To the testifiers, the economic development people from Southwest and from Norwood Young America, have you ever asked the Met Council to do something about it? And have you got an estimate as to what it would cost to bring the Musa line out to Norwood Young America?
Ms. Rock.
Representative Mahoney, prior to my time with the city, I know that there was some discussion about the Met Council taking on the operations of standalone communities' wastewater treatment facilities, but not necessarily extending the Musa line. And the communities like Norwood Young America did not want to see that happen for a number of reasons, because of a project such as this that would require $2.5 million, potentially $5 million in improvements to attract a business that could employ 85 plus people paying pretty substantial wages for a community in essentially rural Minnesota. There would be no guarantee that if we approached the Met Council about doing a project like this that they would be willing to finance it.
Mr. Mahoney.
Representative Leidiger, you know, we've had discussions in this committee and others. I believe you earlier said $3 million initially and $2.5 million maintenance shortly down the road. Whether that shortly is 2 years or 4 years down the road, it certainly implied it was within five. And just doing rough math, because I went to a parochial school, so I have to kind of round this stuff around. That's about $55,000 a job. And at $12 an hour, that's round that up to $15 an hour when you add in the managerial people. That's $32,000 a year, $30,000 a year. Do you know how many years did it take to pay back that $55,000 per job?
I haven't done the math, Mr. Chair.
No.
And that's assuming your figures are correct. I mean,
it just took them right from her, from you. I think the witness wants to say something.
Go ahead.
Chairman Gunther and Representative Mahoney, the project cost for us to do the initial expansion to accommodate this new user is $2.5 million. What we're asking is to become eligible for the Greater Minnesota Business Development Infrastructure Grant Program. The maximum grant, I believe, through this program is $250,000.
I think it's $1 million, but
I don't have all of the job wages. I could get you that information if you wanted to see what it is, but it's more substantial than I was speaking very generally.
I think the number is 1 million, not 250,000.
So long as you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It's $1 million, and you're eligible for up to half of that.
Okay.
So long as you put up the other half. So, Mr. Chair,
Representative.
To Representative Leidiger or whomever, what is the total cost of the sewer upgrade? I mean, are we over the next 5 years? What's your total cost? I mean, because I've heard $5.5 million, I've heard three, I've heard $2.5 million.
Chairman Gunther, Representative Mahoney, what we've been told by our consulting city engineer is that the initial project to accommodate this new business's projections on day one is in the range of $3 million. There's the potential, if the company's growth projections hold true, that we may need to do another expansion project 5 years down the road.
Or a total of?
We believe that could be another $2.5 million.
So, Mr. Chair, there and Representative Leidiger, there's my $5.5 million for the numbers that your witness gave were total of 85 jobs. I think actually 90 jobs. So roughly rounding that up to 100 employees. And even if you got other businesses and added another 100 jobs, you're still in the $25,000 of subsidy per job just on the sewers. And that's all with borrowed money. It's all with borrowed money, because that's where this money all comes from. We pay for it with bonding dollars, and you know, that's where these grants come from, is from bonding dollars. That's how we pay for it as a state. So is that what you want to do for us? You want us to borrow more money so that you can expand out in Norwood Young America? Representative Whitehair.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does is it allows these three cities, Norwood in particular, the ability to compete for a grant. And it could be $10 million project. The grant that we're talking about, the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant, a city may receive no more than $1 million within a 2-year period. So we're talking $500,000. I mean, it's up to the city to find the other dollars that it may need to build whatever it needs to build.
So then you're okay with the idea of the state borrowing money to create this grant program so that Norwood Young America can apply for a borrowed money from the state? Because we are borrowing the money to pay for that grant. And I think actually we just passed that bill out of this committee that borrows that money over to the bonding chair. So you're okay with that? That's what I'm trying to get
sure.
to. You have to say yes or no.
Representative Leidiger.
I'm fine with allowing the city to compete for those dollars. Absolutely. It doesn't have a lot of alternatives. And I applaud the city for working on its economic development. You've already heard how the city has had some difficulties in retaining jobs. I mean, I think this is a good economic development scenario, and I applaud them for doing what they're doing. Now, this is one way to get some additional dollars that it needs.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney,
and Representative Leidiger, you do realize that those dollars are borrowed money, that the state is borrowing money to create that grant program. You do realize that those are borrowed dollars that your city that you're representing will apply for as a grant.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Leidiger.
The city wants to go ahead and be eligible to apply for these grant dollars. We all understand where these dollars come from.
Mr. Chair, So we all understand where these dollars come from. You understand that they come as borrowed dollars that the state issues bonds for and pays interest on. I guess that's the closest I'm going to get to this particular yes or no answer. But to the concerns of my colleagues from the Iron Range or from Highland Park, we've lost jobs. My district over the last 12, 14 years has lost about 12,000 jobs. I don't apply for this. My colleague, Mr. Representative Paymar, lost 3,000 jobs over the last 5 years. Our city, has not applied for these. We haven't put that grant in. We may look for it now that there's another option, because you've opened up a slippery slope with this. You do understand that you're opening up a slippery slope, and as soon as that's done, there will not be a line between the Greater Minnesota Grant Program. Because anybody who has the votes, 68 in the House and whatever it is over in the Senate, will be able to get this in.
Mr. Chair, let me...
Representative Leidinger.
I think what's really applicable here and what is germane is how close this city is to a line. It's within 3 miles. You have the cities on the other side of the line, Plato City, which qualifies for this. And this is only, 2.5 miles, actually? 2.5 miles from the line. And that's why we bring these things forward before a body like this, so that you can look at these things and you can make a determination if this should qualify or not.
Well,
now, if you were a city that was like St. Paul, you have the Met Council. I mean, this is not serviced by the Met Council. They're out in an area that is not being served. And they don't have a lot of opportunities. Everywhere else outside that line can apply for these grants. And this is about as close to being on the line as you can get.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Mahoney,
I'm just off of your map here. Wachovia City is 6 miles. St. Bonifacius is 7, maybe 8. Cologne, we could go down the whole list. Did you know that Woodbury's only 8 miles from the line, too? Should Woodbury be able to do this? I mean, Woodbury is literally 8 miles from the line. It's called the St. Croix River. It's the same deal.
Representative Stensrud. No, Scalzi first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we, in Government Operations Committee, we have many discussions about the Met Council. And did I hear you right in saying that the Met Council had offered to take over your sewer system, or did I hear that wrong?
Representative Scalzi, I can't honestly tell you for sure what that discussion was, because it was a discussion that took place years before I took on the position of Economic Development Director. So I don't know for certain. In a conversation that I had with the current city administrator, he believed, or he thought, that there had been a discussion in the past with other communities in a similar state, Norwood Young America, Cologne, Hamburg, that there may have been an opportunity that the Met Council presented that they would take on the operations of our wastewater treatment plant. I can't tell you for sure because I wasn't there. It would be hearsay. So,
Representative Scalzi.
Just as a follow-up, I mean, I can sense the slippery slope here, because I'm just thinking of the 7-county metro area, and we sometimes talk about the 11-county metro area, because as people are requiring services, it these things happen, and as we look at this map, we can tell that, you know, probably in 20 years, this will look very different. But I'm just thinking that I think your first stop, since you are part, one of the seven county metro cities, you are part of the Metro Council, your first stop should be to talk to the Metro Council and to ask them if they would assist you, if there is some type of assistance other in that venue rather than as an outstate Minnesota.
Chairman Gunther, Representative Scalzi, there are no similar programs that the Met Council offers that would help us be able to do this expansion project. And in fact, conversations with Tom Caswell, who's our staff representative at the Met Council, over the last few weeks, he's indicated that there's support for us to be able to become eligible for the Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Grant Program.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just had a couple observations. I appreciate Representative Mahoney doing some math for us on the committee. I find myself doing that for many of the bonding proposals that are coming in, because you know we all want certain projects to move forward, and oftentimes I'm crunching the numbers myself, and I can't remember what the number we came with, $32,000 or $38,000. That was on the low end of most of the proposals we saw for the bonding. I saw them as, I think, as high as $85,000 per job, depending on which group that came in. And I appreciate that. I mean, that money comes at dear cost to our taxpayers, and they do want us to, you know, kind of look out for their value. So I appreciate that concern also. But yet we look at, you know, infrastructure, and yet we sometimes look at, you know, ball stadiums and Saints stadiums, and at a much higher cost per projected job. So just when you back up and look at the big perspective, you know, I think some of those, we need to be aware of those, but certainly these kinds of this request and the value and cost per job, I think, falls well and into the range of everything we do here down on the Capitol, or things that I've been, you know, looking as they come forward. So those are just my couple of comments. Thank you.
Representative Swedinski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Maybe this is probably more of a comment, but you know, I think those lines are important. And you know, we mentioned being 3 miles over the line. Is there any idea, just generally, I'm not asking anyone in particular, how many cities it could potentially, you know, if we're setting new precedent with a 3 mile, if we move the line 3 miles inside the current line, so rather than just simply carve out cities, how many cities would potentially be involved in a project that could be eligible for something like this? So, you know, my guess is there's probably 40 cities. So, is there been any other conversations to simply move the line rather than have exemption?
I don't know if anybody wants to answer that, but in other words, Norwood Young America wouldn't be in Carver County; it would be in Cloud County. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
That would be unique. I know there's a bunch of people. There's a bunch of people down in his new district that live in Iowa that want to go to school in Minnesota, but they won't move that line.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Rukavina's always wanting to move the St. Louis County line outside the Lewis.
Or the Canadian border to Highway 2.
Yeah.
Good question, though.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. You know, it seems like we're talking that we've got some Met Council folks, and then we have the Greater Minnesota Grant. You kind of sounds like there's a potential that you're in a no man's land, potentially where you're maybe not being engaged as far as the potential for loans and some of those things. That there isn't a program there, being that you would want to participate in something that's outside of the area. Am I correct in that assumption, or?
Representative Leidiger.
That's generally it.
Okay.
We're in a no man's land. And once again, I just want to reiterate, you're what we're doing is we're allowing the cities to compete for it. I mean, there's a lot of steps in order to get dollars. And yeah, other cities can go through the same kinds of wickets to get there as well. If that's what they needed to do. There's a lot of those cities, if you think about within the seven county metropolitan area, are already being serviced satisfactorily by the Met Council. We're talking about a city that's not being serviced.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this discussion reminds me of the legacy discussion over Metro Parks and Greater Minnesota Parks and how the split occurs for the money and who can compete for which pot. And I've had the pleasure of serving through that and living through that, and I can tell you, there's take no prisoners. I mean, that is war. And so with that, I was thinking maybe we border quite up in the Northeast, we border a few things, the Canadian border, and we border a city of the first class, Duluth, the Taconite Relief Area. And so I was wondering if the author would be willing to take a friendly amendment to add the Taconite Relief Area to this same bill, and so we'd be eligible to compete for those grants. Or better yet, question is, why don't you use your local property taxes to pay for this like we do up in the Northeast? I mean, you've shown a lot of interest, Representative Leidinger, in the Taconite Relief Area and how we use our funds, our local property taxes. So I'm just interested in your thoughts on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd actually like them to qualify to apply for some of the funds that you have in the, I forget what that's called.
IRRB?
Yeah, the IRRB. Why don't we go access that for this?
Were you willing to forgive your property taxes?
And forgive our property taxes. That's right.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Dill.
Well, you've got for sure 68 votes, so give it a rip.
Representative Mulry.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I didn't have a question there. It's just a lot of kind of complaining that they didn't get the opportunities in this case of that's outside the metro area, but they get all kinds of services and benefits from being in the metro area, so they want to pick and choose, it seems.
Good point. You know, the way I look at this issue, if we don't do something, is Norwood Young America and New Germany and what other town that was, are we dooming them to die because they can't grow anymore economically? And if we said that you can no longer have any acceleration to getting any industry in your district, you can't use the IRRB money. You can't use the Met Council money. You can't, you know, what we're doing is they're caught in the middle. It's a tough place to be. It's kind of like that town of Truman that I told you about with their sewer problem. They don't qualify for any money from the PFA because it was due to a flood. And they don't qualify for any money for the flood because the, what's the name of that organization the feds have?
FEMA.
FEMA said it's got to go before the first floor. Water's got to be over the first floor before they qualify. They have no place to go. They no longer can be insured. And Young America's kind of that way right now. The Met Council doesn't seem like, because this issue's been around for a few years, they don't seem like they're rushing to the aid of these communities to help them. If we don't do something to allow them to grow, to increase the ability for their sewage treatment plant to handle the industries that they're attracting, we are really dooming them to go into shrinking completely for a long time. I think somebody mentioned that this map is going to change in a whole lot in the next 20 years. There's going to be a time that they don't want anything from Greater Minnesota, I think. However, I really believe that these communities will grow. I look at the urban sprawl has hit Le Sueur pretty hard right now. We have to do something for communities like this. So, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I think Norwood Young America needs this particular opportunity. I just think that maybe the explanation that the Met Council chooses not to do a whole lot for some cities and some places where all they do is they get the crap kicked out of them time and time again, and they never can do anything right. You know, sometimes actions have consequences, and we all need to learn up here to better get along, to work better. This is one of the better committees for it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say that anything different. This is probably the best committee I sit on for getting along with everybody. But sometimes when you kick somebody in the shins, you get kicked back.
Well, in this case, I think that we should move this bill. And it's going where?
General Register.
I've heard every possible argument against your bill. Or
Doug Johnson Fund.
Dougie Johnson Fund?
Doug Johnson? Those people have certain
give me a break.
Here. Yeah. I'm sure the Rangers don't.
I'm just starting to get along with Carly Moline now. But anyway, I think, Representative Leidinger, you want to move to have your bill passed and be sent to the General Register. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not sure. I do, Mr. Chairman. I recommend House File 2874 be approved and sent to the General Register so that I can hear from Representative Moline and Dill and Rukavina and everybody else on the floor. But
I'm not so sure that's going to happen. Representative Leidinger moves that House File 2874 be passed and sent to the General Legislature. Register. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion passes.
Can you see a division on that, Mr.?
You can see a division if you care to.
I'd like division on that.
Very well. All in favor of that motion, please raise their hand.
Oh, all those opposed.
Are you really
all
that
slow? All those opposed, Tom? Raise their hands. Six motion dies. With that,
it's not a requirement.
We will move to the other bill on the agenda. I hope it's a little easier. That'll be nice.
All right.
Madam Chair,
oh, yes.
I would like to move House File 1787 to pass. And no, Ways and Means. Ways and Means, excuse me. This has a positive impact. House File 1787 is a Board of Engineering policy bill. In addition to the engineers, the board regulates architects, landscape architects, land surveyors, geoscientists, and interior designers. This committee handles the general fund appropriations for the board. The bill makes policy changes in areas of ethics decision, education, strengthening the Practice Act, interior design application fees for board services, housekeeping, obsolete language removed. This is a policy bill but would result in some of these changes that have produced a fiscal note which shows a $30,000 to $35,000 savings to the state. I have an author's amendment.
Would you like to move House File 1787, the A1 amendment?
I would. And with that, I'll have my testifiers describe the amendment.
Madam Chair and Representative Gunther and members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Christine Cubes. I am a public member of the board and the immediate past chair, and I'm very pleased to be with you here today. Just by matter of introduction, I'm here also with a member of MSPE, Brian Malm, as well as the executive director for the board, Doreen Frost, is back here, and other members of the board and board staff. So thank you for your time today to address this. It's a policy bill, but nevertheless an important bill.
Is this to the amendment, or should we?
That was just my general introduction. Here I go. Oh. Yes, the amendment is to page 2, line 10, to insert a phrase limiting the certification language change that we are asking for.
Would you like me to come further?
If anybody has any further questions.
We're going to have a larger discussion. Okay. Is there any discussion on the amendment, the A1 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The A1 amendment has been adopted.
Thank
Very
you.
Well.
You'd like to proceed?
I think I've described the bill. And we have some testifiers that like to explain it further. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gunther, Madam Chair, and the committee. I've already introduced myself. We're pleased to be here today. The board we represent is a licensing agency that protects the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Minnesota by providing a reasonable assurance that its licensees and certificate holders are competent, ethical practitioners with the necessary knowledge and skills to that are appropriate to their title and role. And as Representative Gunther mentioned, the board represents seven disciplines, architects, engineers, land surveyors, landscape architects, geoscientists, which includes professional soil scientists and professional geologists, both, and certified interior designers. The board was founded in 1921. Minnesota founded the board then. And today, the board licenses over 18,000 licensees in the state of Minnesota. So those are licensees either who are citizens of the state or who are citizens of other states who have licenses in this state. The initiative for the legislation that is now before you began in 2009 when the board was participating in a national dialogue on ethics among the organizations that examine and license design professionals. And that dialogue was calling for an improvement in awareness of the integration of ethics with professional practice as well as ethics with participation in examination. And we brought the issue back to Minnesota, to the board, and we began outreach on ethics in 2009 on a grassroots level, teaching our licensees how the Minnesota statutes and rules that currently exist govern the licensees, and call for ethics and professional practice in all phases of obtaining licensure. So that relates to how you comport yourself when you're taking an exam, your truthfulness to the tribunal and your appropriate conduct in taking an exam, your truthfulness to the state board in obtaining licensure, in renewing your license, in testifying when you renew about your continuing education and your qualification for licensure. As a natural outgrowth, the board perceived the need and the wisdom of dedicating some of the required continuing education credits to ethics education. And that's really what the initiative for this bill was. And in preparing the bill, we also then identified, while we were at it, some other areas that may need to be addressed. For instance, strengthening the Practice Act, which we'll talk about in a moment, setting fees for services rendered that were not currently being captured, and that's yielding the positive cash flow for the state, and cleaning up some obsolete language that existed in the statute. I understand that your materials include a short summary of the bill, so I trust that you have that before you. And I understand you also received a primer on the board. It's a short right, threefold, and that gives you a bit of background on the board and its history and our mission in serving the state. I'm going to give you a brief outline of the basically four components, the main components of the proposed bill, and I will begin with ethics. Minnesota law currently requires licensees to complete 24 hours of continuing education every 2 years. And the bill that we're proposing here dedicates 2 out of those 24 hours for ethics. It is noteworthy that as part of our grassroots effort to raise awareness of ethics, we discussed the issue extensively and obtained the support of all of the professional societies. So not sure if you're all familiar with that, but for instance, the architects have their own professional society. So do the engineers, so do the land surveyors, so do the landscape architects. All of them have their own professional societies. And we've been doing grassroots outreach and education to those groups, dialogue with those groups, and we've received support of all those groups, all those disciplines that are governed by the board for the ethics initiative. The bill also requires licensees to keep their continuing education paperwork for 4 years. Now, this sounds perhaps a bit mundane, but the idea is to help the licensees know that they have the data that they need if they're audited. Audits may occur in the year of the license renewal, and they need to have them for their prior 2 years, and sometimes people give the dog ate my lunch, the dog ate my homework, the dog ate my whatever excuse, and so the rule would now require that they keep their paperwork for 4 years to help them help themselves. Next, the bill strengthens and clarifies the Practice Act by reserving the use of the term PE for professional engineers. You may already have been aware of the term PE. You see that behind a professional engineer's name. The change will serve the public welfare by eliminating confusion that can arise by those who use PE to gain favor when they may not meet the criteria for licensure. We have had episodes of people who've been disciplined for trying to pass themselves off as a PE by using that term when they're not appropriately qualified for licensure. I would like to make a mention about the fact that PE is similar to what we know of as CPA in as far as use of the term. It is a nationally utilized term and nationally recognized as denoting a professional engineer, just like CPA is a certified public accountant. And it's a national term. We just don't have it currently protected in the statute, and we feel it important to do so. The licensure of professional engineers is governed nationally and internationally, as a matter of fact, by every state or jurisdiction. So we're looking to make the statute more clear and reserve that use of PE only for the professional engineer. For the next point relating to the professional engineers, the point is specific to the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers, and I will defer to Brian Mall. Brian?
Thank you, Christine. Hi. Madam Chair.
If you could identify yourself and proceed.
Indeed. My name is Brian Mall. I'm a licensed professional engineer, and I'm here today representing the 1,100 members of the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. We're here today to speak in support of the board bill in general, and specifically to a provision in the bill which would limit the requirement for engineers to obtain additional licenses or certifications beyond professional engineering license in order to practice professional engineering. Licensed professional engineers practicing in a variety of disciplines work across the state of Minnesota in government, private practice, construction, education, and industry. To become licensed, engineers must obtain a 4-year bachelor's degree in engineering from an accredited program. Following completion of the bachelor's degree, they must take an 8-hour comprehensive exam and pass that exam. Then they must go and work in industry under a licensed professional engineer for a period of 4 years. Following that experience, they must take another 8-hour comprehensive exam, at which point they become licensed as a professional engineer. As Christine mentioned, there is a continuing education requirement during every 2-year licensure period, must obtain 24 hours of continuing education. The provisions of the engineering license are enforced by the State Board of Licensure. Engineers are required to only practice in the areas in which they are competent. So the only discipline that they may practice in is the area that they're competent in. Violations of the provision of the license would result in disciplinary action by the board, which could mean suspension or revocation of the license and a civil penalty. The professional engineering license represents the livelihood of a professional engineer, and it is in that engineer's interest to protect that livelihood by strictly conforming to the provisions of the license. This ensures includes ensuring competency through that continuing education. We feel that the education and experience requirements of the license, combined with the enforcement power of the board, is adequate to ensure that licensed professional engineers are fully qualified to practice professional engineering and that the health, safety, and welfare of the public is protected. Prior to this hearing, MSBE did conduct outreach to various state agencies to determine whether there was any opposition to this provision by agencies who work with engineers. We did contact the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Department of Health, Department of Labor and Industry, Department of Transportation, and Department of Administration. And during that outreach, we only heard two concerns. First concern was agencies did not want to undo anything that already existed. So there are currently a couple of licenses and certifications that engineers are required to get in addition to their professional engineering license in order to do certain things. Agencies did not want those requirements to go away. So you'll notice in the bill there is an effective date provision in the bill that does preclude those particular requirements from going away. The second concern we had was specifically from the Department of Administration, but agencies didn't want this bill or this language to prevent them from requiring additional certifications or different additional qualifications when they are hiring engineers to perform work for the state in a procurement process. And you'll note that the author's amendment addressed that concern. Lastly, I want to mention that while we feel very strongly, MSP feels very strongly, that the majority of cases requiring an additional license or certification in order to practice engineering is not necessary because the professional engineering license is comprehensive. We recognize that statutes, when they can, should have foresight, and there may be a situation in the future where even we would agree that additional license or certification would be required. And you'll notice that the bill does allow for that, provided that when the certifications or license comes up, that it is shown that the professional engineering license is not adequate. That concludes my remarks, Madam Chair, and I'll turn it back to Ms. Cubes to finish explaining the other provisions in the bill.
Yeah, Ms. Cubes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The third section of the bill discusses the fees for services rendered, and there are three in particular. It sets a $75 application fee for certified interior designers who currently pay no fee for application, even though review of their files takes as much time as for any of the other applicants. And this is simply an oversight product of an earlier legislative oversight that needs correction. Next, there is a $25 fee for verification. Hello? Verification of records for licensees who apply for licensure in other states or out-of-state licensees who are seeking licensure here in Minnesota. Just a note that the $25 fee is consistent with our neighboring states. All of our neighboring states do charge a similar fee like this for verifying records, and they're anywhere between $15 and $35. We chose $25. And also, it's worth noting that the state board staff does spend a full day per week verifying records. Something that I'm doing here with
my cell phone.
Okay, thank you. There's
yeah, you might want to turn your cell phones off, please.
We're also setting a $100 fee for exams that are administrated by the board. In the past, there were the national boards would administer exams. There are some that the board does administer, and for those cases, we would have a $100 fee. I would note that these fees are not increases, but rather they are fees that have not yet existed for services that are provided by the board, and they were provided for free, and we feel it would be appropriate for there to be these modest fees attached. Finally, the bill will take the opportunity to clean up some obsolete language that exists in the statute due to the fact that we have not changed the statute in many years. For instance, it would eliminate past dates or references to old statutes or old accrediting bodies that no longer exist, just bringing it up to date and actually removing that so we won't have to come back to you again to clean up later. Eliminating obsolete board duties, such as developing exam questions. All of the disciplines have national board examiners that create the exams. We no longer are involved in that, et cetera. So in short, Madam Chair and the committee, we would say that the bill provides clarity on a number of levels and is good for the public as well as the professions. And we would ask your support for this bill, and we thank you for your attention and would stand for any questions.
Thank you. You gave very good testimony, very thorough. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm just looking for the or else part of the bill. I didn't see any. So what if somebody uses the term PE and is not licensed? Then what happens to that person?
Ms. Okay. Cute.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi. The statute in total that governs the professions has a section on discipline. And if one acts out of order, then they are brought in a disciplinary action to the board, and they are otherwise disciplined.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I was just wondering if that was in here or if that's in some other place, and maybe I just missed
section,
it.
It's in another section of the chapter 321. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did I hear you say that the standards and the courses and the questions, everything are national, and you don't do state level testing for these licenses?
What I said was that the use of the term PE is nationally used. It is a term of art that is nationally used, and that that PEs, professional engineers, are examined in each state or jurisdiction wherever they are licensed.
Okay.
That's what I said. I also commented, what else did I say about the nation? That there are national boards. So there's a national board, for instance, the National Council of Architect Registration Boards. That board develops the exam for architects everywhere. There's an NCWS. They create the exam for the engineers and land surveyors nationally. We do not create those exams. So they are examined here, but there is a nationally standard board exam that all of them have to take.
I understand. Follow-up. So then why do all the states give these tests and all the states charge fees for these licenses? Why not just do this like a national certification then? Why are we even doing this, I guess?
There, in some states, I'll give an example of, say, California, for example. California, they're concerned with, for example, structural engineer in California would also be required to take a seismic test because they're worried about earthquakes in California. Minnesota, we're not worried about that. So there are specific state issues that come up that need state-specific requirements. So there's a national seismic test, but it's only applied in those states where seismic issues are of concern.
Representative Kiefer, first of all, we are near the Mississippi River, which is predicted to be a hot spot. Does that mean that there's differences in national standards for interior designers?
Ms. Tubbs.
Madam Chair, I don't know if there are differences in standards. There are. Our executive director says there are. And so but that would be the NCIDQ that manages that exam. And then when that's totally out of the board's purview. These are the national boards of these various disciplines that create those exams. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two. On page 3, line 9, I think it's actually membership on the board. You're eliminated to someone over the age of 25. Only because I carried a bill that judges over 70, could be construed as age discrimination, and I would suggest that sometime between now and before a lawyer sees it, you construct it to be a graduate of a baccalaureate degree program with, I would say, 2 or 3 years of experience might get around that. Then a lawyer might not be able to take you to court. I'm not going to make the amendment, and the author can take care of it if he chooses to or come back later. My question, my main question is there a way for a person to become a engineer without going through a four-year baccalaureate degree program?
Who would like to answer that?
I can answer that, Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney. At this time, there is not.
And could maybe you can answer this. How long has it been that that's been eliminated? Because I will tell you the story. The smartest mechanical engineer I ever worked with was a licensed practical engineer. This is the only engineer that ever bothered to come out to a crew of mechanics putting something together and said to us, hey, does this look like it'll work? And, you know, he was the only one that never had to go back and redo his equipment. So I guess you can't do it anymore?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I'm going to turn around and look at the executive director and ask her that question because I honestly don't know.
She should probably come up to the witness stand.
You could identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
It would be my pleasure. My name is Doreen Frost. I'm the executive director of this licensing board, and I'm also the executive director of the CPA board. Representative Mahoney, Madam Chair, and Representative Benther, there are some professional engineers still under an grandparenting or who come in via comity, which means they meet our standards at the time of the initial licensure in Minnesota, that can have it based on long years of experience. However, that has long been removed, so they tend to be chronologically gifted if they came in without a college degree. It is a particular issue because a couple of our states don't require degrees. The state of Arizona does not require a degree, and the state of Wisconsin does not require a four-year accredited program. So those individuals can still work in Minnesota. They can't use the title professional engineer, and they can work under the direct supervision of a licensed PE. So I would guess many of those, and I know several good engineers that are not professional engineers in the state that are tied with very experienced licensed professional engineers in the state of Minnesota and continue to work under the direct supervision of a licensee.
That answers your question. Great. Any other questions? Did anybody else want to testify?
No, ma'am.
With that, Representative Gunther.
I will renew my motion to have House File 1787 passed and sent to Ways and Means.
As amended.
As amended.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee. And Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Next, we have Sue Abderholden for the presentation on the Individual Placement and Support Program. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we are very grateful for the time you are providing today to learn more about IPS, Individual Placement and Support, a type of supported employment program for people living with a serious mental illness. This committee funds many different employment programs, and we wanted to make sure that you knew about IPS and its effectiveness. We're going to start at the 1,000-foot level and then drill down all the way to the individual level. We ask that you hold your questions to the end to make sure that everyone has a chance to give their piece and they've traveled from quite a distance. When we talk about recovery in the mental health field, we pretty much mean that someone has a home, a job, and a date on a Saturday night. And today I'd like to focus on the job. Having a job provides structure, a reason to get up in the morning, and interactions with others, all important things when you live with a serious mental illness. But sadly, we haven't done well in this area. Only 1 in 10 people with a mental illness is currently employed. Their unemployment rate is 3 to 5 times higher than for those without a mental illness. You can't sit home in your apartment drinking coffee and especially watching daytime TV and expect to get better. We can and must do better. The IPS model has the potential for turning this around. NAMI is very excited about the IPS model because it is very effective in helping people with mental illnesses obtain and retain employment. There are 8 key components. 0 exclusion, if you want to work, you're eligible. Competitive employment is the goal, no sheltered workshops. Rapid job search, no pre-employment assessments or anything like that. Time unlimited support, so you can go back if needed. It's integrated with mental health treatment. There's benefits counseling, so you understand how employment impacts SSI or health care. Systematic job development, really searching and developing those jobs, and attention to client preferences, because we all do better if it's we're doing something that we love. IPS, as you will hear, is very effective. People who are competitively employed through supportive employment programs have higher incomes, improved self-esteem, and improved quality of life, and are less likely to need mental health services such as hospitals, crisis services, and day programs.
Good afternoon, Representative Gunther and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Grace Tangier Schmidt. I'm with Guild Incorporated, a private not-for-profit community health community mental health agency in the metropolitan area. We provide an array of recovery-focused community treatment and rehabilitation services for adults who have serious mental illnesses such as schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and bipolar disorder. These illnesses, as probably most of you know, can affect most every aspect of an individual's life, often over many years. So we also provide employment services then that are integrated with our clinical mental health services, one of the features of the individual placement and support model. This means that the employment specialist works as an active member of the clinical mental health treatment team. Information is shared. There is one case record and one service plan. Everyone is on the same page and supports employment. Given the time that I have, I will focus on just three of the practices that Sue mentioned, which are the anchors for the individual placement and support employment model. First, as the name describes, job finding is individualized. It's based on the preferences and strengths of the individual, as well as his or her work experience, not on a pool of jobs that are available or only one type of job, regardless of one's interest or experience. It may be part-time or full-time. As is true for all of us, a good fit with our work helps ensure long-term success and satisfaction. Second, competitive employment is the goal, which simply means that individuals work in jobs that pay at least minimum wage and are open to anyone in the labor market, not just people with mental illnesses or disabilities. And finally, the individual placement and support model includes follow-along support over the long term. Supports are proactive and ongoing for as long as a person needs them and not limited to 60 or 90 days. Individuals can get help in changing jobs as they gain experience. I think of these follow-along supports as a form of customized or specialized employee assistance. Serious mental illnesses are chronic health conditions. And as with other chronic conditions, symptoms may flare up from time to time. Easy access to assistance to manage a change in one's health condition can prevent job loss, which benefits, of course, both the individual and the employer and our community. The individual placement and support model is effective in helping those in our community mental health services to become part of the competitive labor market. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. And if you could identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee, Representative Gunther. My name is Claire Courtney. I work for the Department of Employment and Economic Development and Vocational Rehabilitation Services. I'm a rehabilitation program consultant, and I work on the implementation of individual placement and support in the state of Minnesota. Just as my colleagues have described some of the collaboration that goes on the local level to support people with serious mental illness who want to go to work, IPS requires collaboration on the state level between two departments. In 2006, the Department of Human Services, Adult Mental Health Division, and Employment and Economic Development, Vocational Rehabilitation Services received an award from the Johnson & Johnson Dartmouth Community Mental Health Program to help us implement individual placement and support in the state of Minnesota. That grant provided us with seed funding for some of the initial training and infrastructure and implementation efforts. Following that time, we have continued to fund individual placement support using a combination of vocational rehabilitation services, state and federal dollars. We currently have 6 projects in the state of Minnesota that continue to operate and provide individualized placement and support services. The grant funds right now cover the cost of employing the direct service staff, whom we refer to as employment specialists. They assist people with serious mental illness to find employment and also to maintain employment and advance in their careers. We continue to participate in a national learning collaborative. We produce employment outcomes and data, and we provide that to the Dartmouth Psychiatric Research Center, who continues to do research nationally and now internationally on individualized placement and support. In the last reporting period, which went through December, so this was a 3-month period of time, 107 individuals received individual placement and support services, and during that time, 65% of them participated in employment. And I'll turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself. Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Melinda Champ, and I work with the Department of Human Services in collaboration with Minnesota DVRS regarding the employment policies focusing on adults with serious mental illnesses. And part of what I do is really take a look at what are the factors that really we need to consider as we take the principles that you heard about later, or perhaps have read about, and how do we anchor those into real life practice. Of major concern would be the level of collaboration that is active and present between the mental health treatment services team and then the incorporation of employment services or rehabilitation agencies in the state of Minnesota. What we really want to see happening within that is that team concept is building. We're engaging information relative to the outcome of employment and those factors around mental health which impact the person's ability to move forward in their recovery. The teams would engage mental health practitioners, mental health professionals, as well as employment specialists. Each IPS project represents a unique local collaboration between community mental health providers and those communities. A counselor from Minnesota's vocational rehabilitation program is embedded in each team. And what this means is that we can more fully activate and maximize and utilize resources across a number of professional domains. Planning for statewide implementation and expansion of IPS is a joint effort, like my colleague Claire pointed out. It also means that we need to take time to think about the ways in which intra-agency or inter-agency collaboration is occurring and look at how we train and how we focus our attention on the development of that implementation. The other factor that's really relevant is examining what is sometimes referred to as fidelity. And this means that we're taking a look at what are the research indicators which are associated with achieving employment outcomes. And that what we found nationally is that high fidelity scores help more people become successfully employed. Fidelity is measured based on an annual 2-day visit conducted by trained IPS reviewers. And we use a 25-item nationally validated fidelity score scale. Minnesota's projects in Minnesota have all achieved high levels of fidelity as measured by their scores. What we also put into the handout is additional information that we are compiling as to what does it take to move forward so that when we are considering the implementation and the access building that's going to be necessary in the future, we're really taking into account what seems to work and what are those factors that seem to make a difference. All right. Thank you. And next.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, and the committee, my name is Rachel Hagstrom, and I'm an employment specialist at Transitional Supported Employment of Minnesota, or TransM. And we have implemented the IPS model into our agency and have been seeing really wonderful results. We have had an intensified collaboration with the Vocational Rehabilitation Center as well as the mental health centers. This has resulted in more success for the individuals we serve in reaching their competitive employment goals. We've been able to provide efficient and thorough support for these individuals, and people are rapidly reaching their job goals without having to jump through hoops. We've implemented weekly, sometimes daily, collaboration and communication with the mental health providers and the vocational rehabilitation providers. And we also do monthly and bi-monthly formal staffing to really stay on top of things and stay on the same page, and it's been working really well.
Thank you.
Hi, Chairman and members of the community. My name is Vanessa Pickup. I'm also an employment specialist with TransM. And I just want to go off of some statistics that Rachel had given you. I have some of those here for you. Basically, right now, with our job placements, we're up 35 to 40%. Our individuals are maintaining employment for 160 days or more, which is also another 80% there. And the biggest thing is that a lot of our exits, when people can exit out of our program, they are not due to hospitalization, which is a really big impact. So to summarize this, I want to turn this over to one of the consumers that has benefited from our program personally.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Could you identify yourself, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have this written down.
Good.
My name is Russ Hall. I am the founder and owner of Mr. Muscle Commercial Cleaning Services. This came about in the last 4 months, I would say, and it was a result of my not being able to do much of anything else. I had to pretty much create my own employment, and there was a time not that long ago that I was ready to attempt suicide. I got so severely mentally ill. Things were getting worse. They tried so many different medications on me. Those weren't working. It was exacerbating some of my symptoms when they gave me one pill. It was a big mess. I spiraled downwards. I spent the last 5 years in my bedroom. I got to the point where I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't even come out to eat. I would have something brought to my room, and I would eat it there. The longer this went on, the worse it got. And I pretty much was, people like me are the bottom of the barrel as far as employment. There was no opportunity that I knew of. I tried everywhere. I gave up 10 years of sobriety shortly after my mother committed suicide, and that was the end for me. I was ready to go. I got a DWI, went out, got myself in trouble. I got, it was much like this, court is anyway. It was real frightening, and I was, part of my sentence was to be, to go to this place called Place to Belong for mentally ill people, to have a place to go associate with other people. They told me about TransAm, and I had never heard of them. And there was a guy at a place where I was, at a place to belong, that was so severely mentally ill, I didn't think anyone could find him a job. And they got him a job. So I thought, well, maybe there's some hope left for me. So I went to talk with Kathy. She's right there in the black. She doesn't mm-hmm. want any credit whatsoever. She's a very good Christian woman. And what she did was she told me that I'm not bottom of the barrel, and I still have value. Went 8 days without eating because we had no food left. And I got an autistic son who needed me. And my wife has got a heart problem now, and she couldn't do anything to help. And I thought, what kind of man can't support his own family? I didn't want to stick around anymore, but I did this because I promised them a place to belong. I'd at least give TransAm a try. So I did, and it was hard for me to even stay there. I think I lasted about 10 minutes, and she said, that's okay. And she said, but you're not going to go back to your bedroom. You're not going to isolate anymore. We're going to help you. And I, all right, whatever. So I went home, and I just went back into my room, and I didn't believe yet, and I just didn't want to do anything. And then she called me and said, you're isolating. Come and visit me. And I couldn't, so she said, let's take a few minutes once a week on the phone. And then as you get a little better, then it's rehab. It's like you bring back a muscle. You have to do the same with the brain. And she understood this. The TransAm understands this. And the only thing I could do is some menial job. If you just give me anything, maybe I could get a spark of self-esteem and do something. And well, I got a job at Pizza Hut for an hour, but I couldn't comprehend all the things. It used to be they made pizza. Now they're restaurants. Now you got to have all these I had a 5-page test I was supposed to take. I have short-term memory problems that are worse than ever, and every year it's getting worse, like a lot of you can relate, I'm sure.
I agree. I agree.
And so there pretty much was very little that I could do, and I eventually had to leave Pizza Hut even for an hour a week, and it was like torture to get me out of the room just to even try to function for an hour. And we tried janitorial jobs, and they, you know, try, I've worked in 15 years, you know, try to get a job when you haven't worked in 15 years and you've got severe mental illness. I am bipolar. I, through the help of Trans Am, I'm alive today. I didn't kill myself. And had I not made that appointment, I wouldn't be here. I don't know how cost-effective people like me are. I don't know what it what it's worth to save one life. I don't know if Trans Am will always be here, but I now have three accounts that I'm taking on small ones and building myself up. And I'm, from here on out, going to do better every day because I've already come along in these past few months incredibly. And I went to a diner in Fergus Falls. We don't have a lot of job opportunities like there were here. I could get a job here, but I can't there, and I couldn't. And when this diner wouldn't hire me for a dishwasher, and she literally laughed in my face, I got angry, and I said, I'm not going to take this. I'll create my own damn employment if you won't help me. I got so much encouragement from Trans Am. They sent me over to DRS. I got some money. They gave me $2,500. I bought some equipment. And nobody's going to laugh in my face again. That's all I got.
We're very proud of you.
Thank you.
It takes a lot to come here.
Yeah.
So does anybody have any questions?
Congratulations.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We appreciate you taking the opportunity to hear about the IPS model. You know, it really works for people with a serious mental illness. We hope that we're kind of laying the groundwork for the future in terms of, you know, perhaps more funding, perhaps expanding the program. We know that people with mental illness can work if they're provided the right type of support and training. Thank you.
We thank you very much for all you do.
And I was wondering, can we have a raise?
My life.
With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.